One of the most pernicious aspects of life in the church, and not just the Roman church, but especially, I think, the Roman church, is a heresy that is called perfectionism. I don't know how old you guys are, but at least I grew up with this constantly being confronted with this model of the totally perfect life, and then you had to measure yourself over against that all the time, and of course, you always came up wanting. So it's wonderful. It's a great means of control because it gives you a total sense of ineffectiveness, of ineptness in your life. And that's part and parcel of a picture of the church that I had growing up, which is being reinforced today, I think. It's called triumphalism. Triumphalism and perfectionism. Triumphalism is a kind of institutional form of perfectionism. Namely, that the church is always right. And of course, by church, we clearly mean the hierarchy. That's the way we understood church. And it's really unfortunate because this has blinded us to all sorts of other things in the church. If you look at the history of the Jesus movement, it is a mess. It is a mess. Read the documents of the first three or four centuries of the Christian movement. It's chaos. It's chaos. And we're not talking about little incidental things. We're talking about Trinitarian doctrine. Above all, how do we understand the figure of Jesus? You know, I was trained. It was all Jesus. Jesus came and glowed, and everybody saw Jesus glowing, and therefore they fell down. And, you know, that's not the way it happened. That's not the way it happened. But you see how all these pieces fit together to create this sick image of the way things are supposed to be. You know, which provides the basis for St. Pius X's injunction when asked the job of the laity, and famously responded, they are to pay, to pray, and to obey. In other words, they're totally secondary. So what can we do to offset that? Well, go back to the scriptures. Just a footnote, the best way, if anybody's really interested in doing some serious scriptural study, the best thing you could get is something called Gospel Parallels. It's a book, there are several editions of it, in which the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and sometimes John, because John is so weird, he just merits footnotes in this thing, are compared. And I want to take this passage from Mark to try to disassemble this notion of perfectionism and neatness. It is virtually generally, universally agreed that Mark is the oldest of the Gospels, the first written, probably around the year 70. There are some naysayers, but they're very much in the minority. And so what is interesting to watch is how what Mark says gets then edited by Matthew and Luke, who both apparently had the Gospel of Mark in their hands when they were writing their own. And there's a simple verb in this passage from Mark that says volumes. And Jesus could do no deed of power there. We're talking about incapacity of Jesus to do anything. When, however, you look at the parallel passage in Matthew, it says Jesus would do no power. Now, that change of a C to a W is enormously important. And also, Matthew will say, and Jesus cured everybody who's in the neighborhood. Here we have a few people. So what's going on? I would like to point out that one of the things, if we believe that the scriptures are revealed, one of the things is revealed is precisely the progressive nature of our understanding of God. Doesn't spring like Athena from the head of Zeus, fully formed, you know? No, it was laborious. It took centuries even to try to figure out who Jesus was. If you know anything about the first three centuries of the church, they're constantly squabbling, and sometimes to the point of bloodletting, about their understanding of who Jesus was. There's a magnificent essay by Cardinal Newman when he was an Anglican His specialty was the church of the first 6 centuries. It's called On Consulting the Faithful in Matters of Doctrine. And he talks about a situation with a guy named Arius, who espoused what is called a subordinationist Christology, namely Jesus was not really equal to the Father. Okay? He was opposed by another theologian named Athanasius. And Athanasius famously wrote, I went to bed one night, woke up the next morning, the whole world was Arian. Except it was not the whole world. It was the episcopacy of those days. It was only the laity who maintained what we came to see as the orthodox belief in Jesus. I think that's extraordinarily telling remark. So again, what the scriptures are revealing also is a pattern of development, which ought to loosen our heads, you know, so that we know that every ecclesial form is provisional. You know? And this is so important today, given the progressive to the past three papacies, at least the past two, progressive centralization of authority in the church, where one man knows everything. The great Bernard Haring, I'm reading another of his books called My Witness for the Church, and he describes the fight that he had with the Holy Office, Cardinal Ratzinger's bureau. Not only he, but Eve Congar and Karl Rahner and Edward Sillibix and every major theologian that became experts at the council. Every one of them was condemned. Every one of them had to face trial. Why? Because the belief was that we know best, that we alone know best. So what do we pull out of all this mess? Because that's what it is. That we should be riding lightly to any ecclesial form, any historical form that the church takes. But are we simply left at sea, as the present Pope says, in a morass of relativism, one of his no-nos? No, we're not. We have the figure of this man, Jesus, who one famous Protestant theologian uses a book title. Jesus means freedom. Jesus means freedom. Simply borrowing from Paul, for freedom, Christ has made us free. Which means what? That we're not incapacitated. That we, the church, are not incapacitated. There is such a thing as what is called the sensus fidelium, the sense of the faithful. Let us take a concrete example where that operates today, I believe. Okay, on the one hand, we have the Polish Pope and now the German Pope screaming around, and that's not too harsh a way of putting it, about contraception. We have the American bishops going to the mat for the issue of contraception. The last statistic I saw was that 98% of Roman Catholics use contraceptive methods. What's going on? What's going on? Where does the truth lie? We know the truth is not simply to be found in some Vatican archive or Vatican library or Vatican office holder. To understand the truth is developmental is to say, my God, Trojan, you can think too. You can think and see and ask other people questions and carry on dialogue to try to figure out where we're supposed to be. And unfortunately, we have the model of a top-down dialogue, where the top talks to the bottom and the bottom has nothing to do but pay, pray, and obey. There's something drastically wrong with that. We have to remember that the primary sacrament, the primary initiative action of God in our lives is not holy orders, but baptism. With baptism, we're given a voice. We're given a place. So we can judge, for instance, the condition of the church today as Herring described it, as seriously pathological. To quote again that statement from Pius XI, the church has become a monstrosity with its enormous head and its little tiny shrunken body. To be able to think for oneself, to have confidence that the Spirit of God is operating all over the place, that there's not a trickle-down theory of truth that upholds, that should be upheld in the church. Jesus could do no miracles. Huh? Keep that in mind. Jesus could do no miracles. As they develop their understanding over centuries of who Jesus was, well, even within 20 years, Matthew will start revising this. Luke will start revising this, and John will start revising this even more. But the point remains that no scripture scholar believes that any of these guys thought Jesus was divine. It took a long time to figure out. So that should give comfort to us peons in the church, that we're not out to lunch, that nobody is safe from criticism, and that the thing we need most of all in the church today is ready capacity to hear, to listen.